interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you Behind the Woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 434. And I hope I have this correctly changed. I guess my encoders are still up, so everything's working this time. I'm going to do a lot of stuff today. Again, it's just skipping the surface. I want to try and bring a different type of a view of what we're moving into, as I have been. There's things that we're going to have to do and step up. A lot of more people are coming up to say that. I've been interested that there people are finally saying, the people that other people listen to in numbers, we really have to step up. There's not going to be a way to stop this. We're going to find out the ball has been rolling, the eight ball is rolling against us, and we're going to have to protect ourselves. I'm really having trouble understanding why nobody really responds. And I understand a little bit of it, I think, but it becomes a judgment that I don't really want to hold on to, that I was hoping, and I've said this before with the miners and the mining district, they walked away from their responsibility. Not everybody, but most. And the problems continued, and the problems are getting worse. And it's kind of like I've said before, it's every man and woman for themselves now. As the world panic hits the iceberg, that they've been saying that someone was going to plan, that someone was going to execute, and it's astonishing to me how many people are involved that all agreed and didn't say anything about it, that the rest of us are not really saying too much about. But I'm going to start this broadcast off with what I didn't get to last week, off of Technocracy News and Patrick Wood's website, explaining a lot of what I've explained. He gets more into detail about the technocracy part of the agenda coming on. That's just a part. It's really the rule by technology. And there's no science in that. That's how another thing you can tell when they say best science. It's not science. The word here is adjective something. Whenever you have a world that people are adding an adjective in front of what you thought was before, it's now not what it was. But Patrick Wood comes up to explain, and there's people around the world, around the country apparently, trying to protect their sons and daughters in school. Now, my idea was that COVID would provide this ability to have everybody understand what's going on and start homeschooling their own sons and daughters and stop this generation from being polluted and corrupted and adulterated and abused, essentially. But this last week, Patrick Wood came up with Effective Citizenry, a Model for Successful Local Resistance. So I'm going to offer this as just a topic, and I'm going to move on pretty quickly, but I want you to go through. You can see if you need talking points, he's provided it. For those of you that can't do homeschooling, for those of you that think that you need to let the school system do its thing, but you can do some local controls, there is that, but you have to do it in mass and people have to get together. There's some talking points about the condition that we're in on how to cause the local school boards to get more in line, although that's, I think, going to be a little difficult, but it may be what you need to do and it may be how you want to go about it. I'm not here to explain anybody's action particularly. What I want you to pay attention to when I send this out, and if you go get to it, and thank you for, again, I was looking just quickly the day after the broadcast, lots of people were going to the links. I appreciate that because I take hours to build that up and for you. I appreciate just seeing people just do that. I just see click numbers. I don't see who you are, but it's not like, it's just a content numbers thing. And I get this last week, apparently, quite a few people were clicking links. So I appreciate that because I put a lot of time there to do that so that you can move over into and get from what I talk on the basics, you get to get the deeper study of something that may be more interesting to you particularly. And that's where we're going to have to come from. We're going to have to find out that wrong that we want to make right. And I'm just hoping most people find the same wrong to make right, because then there's a whole mass of people moving in that direction on that point, calling out the problem, taking everybody behind the woodshed that needs to be taken behind the woodshed, and you may need help to do that as we move through, as the majority the insane are running the asylum, and the majority agrees with that. The minority is now being targeted, but he's got this a successful, effective citizenry. And I want to offer on top of that, what he doesn't point out, and this is, I think, a major, major failure in lots of people, not understanding part of this condition is going to the communicable disease law and advocating that your son or daughter has not been, had a report on it. I'm asking send a letter to verify, get the evidence before you go. And I think this is going to be a critical and crucial point, because if you look, they're doing mitigation measures without the control, the due process control in the law. That you, on top of what Patrick Wood says, to be effective in what you want to do, to get schools to do their thing, if you're not going to pull out and do homeschooling, identify that your son or daughter does not have the medical report that caused them to be, bringing them into suspicion for being an infectious principal carrying an infectious agent that is a risk to the public. Once you do that, then you prove that everything they're doing in mitigation is not reasonable. They can't know. So if you don't start there, you don't take the fraud out, the fraud continues. And if you've listened to me at all, you understand, and you've watched the courts do this, and you've watched other just the accession of tyranny into the fact that no one's stopping them, that everybody believes that if a governor determined this, then that's the fact. And in fact, that's not really the case. And I'm still just blown away. There's no real effective... Those that should know, those amongst us that thought they were going to be lawyers and going to do the public good and got into the profession, and then they found out it was a profession, they are the most trained, that they haven't stepped up in all this time. It is in one regard a dismay to me, but I also know the condition, so it's not. It's predictable. It's all predictable. So much so, you can put it into a court document, a petition, and the Bar Association will fall into that trap. So, moving on, we'll move pretty quick now. Hopefully, a lot of stuff here. I want to move into something that's not something I don't endorse necessarily. In other words, like I endorse Patrick Wood's efforts to explain to people they have things they need to do and can do. He didn't say the whole picture. I offer the extra on top that I think is the first step. Determine or just declare that you do, because you know, so you can go from there as well, that you know that your son or daughter has not been determined to be an infectious agent, so how are they justifying any mitigation measure? How is it not unreasonable? One of the gentlemen that I mentioned behind the woodshed is that has given us an insight, and I identified for you last week that it's not the doctors that are the experts, it's these patent readers. Anybody who can read a patent and tie, you know, put points together, dots together, are really the experts, if you will, the people who are in the know of what's going on with this, the mitigation side of this, that it's a fraud, that it's an actual harm, it's an irreparable harm upon all of us and society. But for those, and even those are the ones that agree, they're going to, as we heard, Australia, once you agreed, we can wipe our hands of any liability, you were given consent. Disclosure. And so these lies continue, and we're susceptible to them. But I wanted to. It occurred to me that I'm embracing somebody's work that I admire in the truth that's being told. I admire in the intelligence that's coming forward that is integrated, that comes to tell us. But I'm not embracing something I touched on, but I'm not. I'm going to explain a little bit more today. Something we all have to be careful of, not to embrace something because that someone comes with the truth that they're necessarily completely a truth teller, or that their intentions don't have ulterior motives. And this gentleman that I've offered before that is bringing us truths, he was introduced, and what caught my ear immediately was it first introduced to me through that lawyer, Mr. Fuhlmich, out of the German investigatory body. Supposedly 10,000 attorneys on this, and they still haven't got a case. But I appreciate the effort to get the knowledge out. However, they're all, to me, part of a, potentially so, part of a problem. And what this gentleman how he was identified just struck with me in my head, and I said, I've got to watch out for this guy. These are the kinds of people I have to be very careful of, that I've watched for many, probably 20 years now. When I started to realize the word, the doublespeak, the forked tongue type thing, the adjectival nouns that are thrown out, looking at where people are from and what they do and how they're connected up. But, and you can see them by their terms. And interestingly, this is what is being used right now. And this is an invention by this guy, Dr. David Martin, that I've told you about, that's providing us some truths. But right off the bat, he was described as being an international intangible asset underwriter and analyst firm, a CEO that firm spanning work in innovation finance, trade, and intangible asset finance. International intangible asset underwriter and analyst firm spanning work in innovation finance, trade, and intangible asset finance. I don't know what those words mean to you, but to me, they sent up an immediate red flag. Notwithstanding the fact that I tell you what he's telling you is guiding us into what is really going on. This brings up another point. The game that's being played against you is many steps ahead. They're playing chess many steps ahead. And then they found out society is incapable of defending itself and willing to take the servitudes. I don't know if you what words you heard that were important in that, but remember, just recently, for those of you that listen, I've pointed out, and we have to use words and terms here, innovation is something that's being brought on through modernization. I made a whole half a broadcast talking about this, just that term. And you say, well, what's a term? It could be lots of things. Well, okay, so then let's keep going through and looking at some of these terms that are just red flags. They are part of another agenda. They are the agenda I keep speaking. It's why I can identify it. Intangible asset finance. What does that say to anybody? You'll see the words that are... It's almost nonsensical at one level, the types of phraseology that's being used in this. That's another type of clue as well. But what's intangible asset finance? To me, folks, after doing a lawsuit and getting a default judgment against these very same types of people for doing this back in 2013 through the JMD lawsuit, intangible asset finance spoke to me about what I've talked to you about, stalking horse issues and also leverage funding. And so if you start to look at what you're being told in the first paragraph of Dr. David E. Martin, PhD's MCAM website, and I tracked this back through the video that described this, and I was found this immediately. In fact, when you get into his word uses, almost exclusively his websites pop up, which means this guy is very good. He's very good at what he does, and he understands what words and terms do, and he's made himself unique in the use of the words. I maybe ham-handedly do so when I make up terms for this broadcast after the fact, and I try to come up with a term you don't even know about, mashup word, if you were, to try and convey an idea. It's usually going to be unique. It's not going to be much. And if you knew to look for the word, it would be one of the few that pops up. He does that a lot. Interestingly, he also has a product he invented that he uses and sells through this MCAM, and it's called linguistic genomics. And so this guy is word savvy, you know. So I'm going to be now analyzing this and be word savvy with him. I agree and encourage people to listen to him on what he's bringing you to the truth of what's going on with the COVID. What this looks like to me, though, and what caused my ear to be perked based on what I saw was leverage funding, this ends up being an attack against you in the financial side through what you don't already know is going on through what's leverage funding. Well, it ends up being wherever they can get a tax imposition is where they get you, and a lot of times property is where they do the property taxes, where they get the guaranteed funding from, because people don't understand about their property. And leverage funding comes through the state, so it's a local attack that comes as a tax, which nobody understands or maybe even can't fight. That this is This is the type of intangible assets. It's the fuzzy, warm feeling type stuff. It's trying to look out, use a stalking horse of a thing that everybody would want to stop. An empathy steps up to try and help people, and they come in with these ideas, and they then get financing wrapped around systems that are started relative to these intangibilities. And we go through this guy's website. It's nothing but a big intangibility, but it also will start immediately focusing us on the three things that the UN wants to promote, the stalking horses of women, children, and the indigenous. And this is it's like a shock to watch this thing roll out, as you can predict, but it's not a shock because these people sit here to do this interesting, create these interesting dynamics for us to feed into and buy into, and they may very well be part of the system. And until I see more, and it's more clearly and more succinctly and less convolutedly described to me, the terminology on that this guy is tied to is bringing us into that financial intangible asset, intangible investment condition, which is really more of this new agenda coming up. The reset is essentially what we're looking at. Again, I don't want to waste too much time reading. It's not a waste, but it's such a long time to go through all the words that they use. He promotes, rightfully so, promotes his work. But when you look at, he's like a spokesman. He's a spokesman, it says, in the third paragraph. A spokesman for global finance and intangible asset accountability and quality reform. Dr. Martin has worked closely with the United States Congress and numerous trade and financial regulatory agencies in the United States, Europe, and Asia in advocating and deploying infrastructure to support growing reliance on contract and proprietary rights in business transactions. This is now the corporate globalism condition, and he's very well integrated with this. But understand, he is the spokesman. It's like any association. He's the spokesman for a whole industry, which happens to be what? Intangible asset and innovation finance. What are they doing in the States? But innovations. It's the new word now. Innovation zones, remember? This guy's tied in with that. And so, I mean, I don't know how to focus this. Then we go our values. Now, this word values is interesting. And before I go too much further, I think it was at the very top, and I forgot to set this up. It says, our team, and this is about the MCAM organization, we are guided by integrity, animated by enthusiasm, constantly pursuing progress, and built on a foundation of steward leadership. How about we just mash that word up, those two terms, and we just call it stewardship. And you'll see that this is sustainability. This is the title of his whole point. And you read through and you start, again, Mike, I also caught to use the word humanity a lot. Humanity is like a term that just got started here in the last few hundred years. It's not mankind. And if you know, as I've talked to you before, mankind is a different class of thing. And he speaks to humanity, and so that's the animal thing, that's the newer age thing, that's not really what we want to hear about. And he then touches on the values. So creativity and humanity are valued through celebrating and acknowledging ingenuity, customs and cultures from around the globe, innovation and heritable knowledge. What? Well, if you look in there, there are values. And if you look at sustainability, they try to make values. Those are those intangible assets they're going to cause you to pay for when they come to your local legislature and say, this is going to be a good idea to help people. And then they talk globe. Okay, that's the world. We're not going to talk unification here. But what is heritable knowledge? Well, you type that in, and I think I had a look, and his stuff comes, when you put in heritable knowledge, his stuff comes right up. And so he's very central to this continuing theme that is the terms of sustainability, of globalism. As I told you, Agenda 2030 is the financial destruction of you. You're going into austerity. And they do that by, when you go into property and taxes, they're taxing the part of your life. That's another way they do. They profess to give you value. The value they're doing, though, is based in a more environmentally based system, because they talk about ethics. And it's, you got to ask, whose ethics are they actually talking about? And if you go through and start seeing these documentations, you'll start finding out it becomes the ethic of the United Nations, which you'll see if he's, where, how he's tied in. You'll see it as he's tied in. So he has value exchanges. Now, these are interesting, because this would be people who have made leverage funding considerations being paid to them and investments into that, which they're going to get some return. And it's, more importantly, it's all guaranteed income at this point. And it's guaranteed by the system itself, the governmental system itself, that he brings. There's going, apparently coming up, an exchange of these values across for investment. And these all, to me, still speak of a potential fraud as well, because these are initiated by stalking horse principles, but they're actually done by stakeholders. And the stakeholder is like a Genghis Khan, and coming to ask you for something, and if you don't give it to them, it becomes an extortion and coercion of your life, because they're the ones that drive the ethics. And so, I mean, it's... Going on to our story, MCAM has created a global standard of ethical use of and the equivalent access to intangible assets in finance and corporate marketplace. This is not someone that's just getting involved. This is someone who's been involved. You hear by who he involves himself with, he is a connected guy. And what they've talked to is this means communities with heritable knowledge can participate in the ethical use of their wisdom traditions. Well, when you find out, that is talking through to the indigenous. They're monetizing the indigenous knowledge. They make warm and fuzzy programs which leverage funding, which people pay for, to make an inclusive world. And you'll see, if you look through these words that he's using, you'll see he's using a different linguistics to say the same thing. This guy is really an intelligent guy. He might be too smart for himself, though, for me. Smart? Remember? Smart maybe not be too intelligent, at least for us to accept or buy into. Go down a little bit farther in his page, and he talks about Mosaic Collateral Asset Management. That's exactly what MCAM stands for, Mosaic Collateral Asset Management. My experience to Mosaic happens to be in the public lands and what they do with Mosaic land. And that has to do with looking at environmentalism as trumping what mankind needs. It's the inclusion of other species and their needs that you bring together under warm and fuzzy beliefs that they have eventually get superiority. But he's doing this in the context of a corporate marketplace for financing. And they're taking and monetizing these intangible assets. Your culture as an indigenous people becomes monetized, and they do it through agreements. And they sound good, they sound great, but they actually are the perfecting of the security which will allow them to be monetized. We developed happened in the past, structured finance solutions which embrace innovation and obsolescence so that large-scale infrastructure and civil society projects can use public funds more efficiently. Is leverage funding, how they've learned to steal from the public wheel. It's right there. Remember, infrastructure project, that's all you hear about. It's capacity building. It's their capacity to continue the plunder. So I read through this and I see a lot different statement going through from this guy, which I absolutely embrace the truth he's telling, but I'm absolutely terrified that what he is a wolf in sheep's clothing relative to what he does. So let's look really quick, because I'm already a little bit long on this. There's just so much to go. Like that page I could probably go through line by line. It would take a couple hours to go through to show you his linguistics is adjectival. It's an addition, an alteration of what's going on. looked up this linguistic genomics. That caused me a problem because the only definition I know about genomics, he's creative in the use of his terminology, but if you're going to get specific, genomics applies strictly to biological DNA subject matter. And therefore, you can't have a linguistic genomics unless you're going to go adjectival on what it is, and we're not actually talking about genomics at all. And so I went down that path because I wanted to know about, well, is this an adjectival style of communication? Well, it comes up something called latent semantic analysis as he's offering his linguistic genomics as a comparative superior. And there's some problems in this as well, where he's saying that it's superior, but semantic analysis, it used to have some troubles, which I understand have largely been fixed, and the ability to analyze data has been increased using that technique. And they talk about getting beyond keywords. I think Dr. David Martin's method goes into what he calls, that refers to more as metaphor. Well, this still talks about fairy tale in my book because it's not talking to reality. It's investing in these intangibles. One of the intangibles is your buy-in. But beyond, I found an interesting article talking about it, somewhat promoting it, beyond latent semantic analysis. Professional patent analysts are always looking for new tools or unique patent data and analysis and visualization features. I recently viewed, as this author is saying, a demonstration of the intellectual property risk management tool, MCAM DOORS, all in capital letters, which utilizes a distinctive technology known as linguistic genomics and to identify related prior art. Okay, so this is what Dr. David Martin developed. He's developed quite a few other things. But I wanted to get on the how we do this adjectival change shift and move us from where we thought we were in language into a new idea that isn't even, maybe even real. You can do things with it, but it's not the end result of what you're after. That genomics, if you just go to the wiki, and that's, I'm going to go quick here, it explains just what I said. Genomics really is only relative to DNA. What would linguistic genomics be? Well, if you go down far enough in the genomics section, you find something called landscape genomics. Now, what did I just tell you about mosaics and landscape? See, the agencies of the government, they use this an adjectival language, this thesaurus-based language in a way. They find a word that's similar but not the same, and they call something you know, or you should know, if you're in the field of it, if you're in the subject matter of it, you would know one term. They use a slightly different term, and then they put their meaning on it. When we got to landscape, the term landscape, what they're actually talking about are watersheds. When you're doing it correctly, you're dealing in a watershed. They deal in landscape. Well, their landscape is a new definition that's subject to their ethical considerations, which essentially brings in the diversity of life in as a superior to the needs of mankind. And part of this, I'm kind of paraphrasing what the antithesis of what the NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act, is implemented by, but doesn't say. The National Environmental Policy Act gives balance to mankind's needs as a priority, not the diversity of life that's out there that needs to have a place. And this is not to disregard that need, because improper watershed management, you're actually taking care of all that. And if you do it properly, it actually, as I've explained before, man can bring life to a place that can't happen naturally. And so they've adopted this stewardship I talked to you before in this sustainable. So stewardship has been an adulteration of us stewarding the dominion that we were given over the earth. And this is an adulteration of the biblical principle as well. And when I say it there, it reminds me to tell you why I told you at the time, I had a question how he and I think Judy Mikovits, and I'm not saying, I don't know if she's involved in this at all. She's another victim in some regard against the system, trying to expose the system before Dr. Martin comes together at a meeting. It happened to be apparently at a church, but the subject matter they were talking about, and I talked to you the what one guy that spoke was an attorney who was fighting 5G in Tahoe, and I agreed that he had seen the problem and maybe he could push something through, but what the overall meeting was done in a, amongst a church was actually sustainable development. It was humanistic views being spoken to church people. And I didn't understand how David Martin was even in that, because when you, I referenced it because of the lady talking about the bees, and I did went to her website, and she's not talking about actually taking care of bees. They're using it as another stalking horse to get your sympathy, to get your money, and get control and regulations. And so there was an anomaly there that I picked up on. Now I'm beginning to understand why David Martin was there. It wasn't there because he didn't have a connection. He definitely has a connection to these people. But getting back to the genomics, we see an example in the wiki of landscape genomics. Again, it really shouldn't even be there. There's nothing landscape genomics they talk about that speaks to this singular issue with genetics. When you read landscape genomics, it's one of the many strategies used. Strategy. It's a strategy used to identify relationships between environmental factors and genetic adaption of organisms. So environment here, this is the, one of the pillars of the UN, is right in this new form, adjectival term added to genomics. It doesn't mean anything about DNA. It's the new defined term by an adjectival modification. It's what these people do. And if you go through landscape genomics and you see all these other style genomics, population genomics, have nothing to do really with necessarily with genetics at all. But it has to do with their relationship in the environment from which the UN is utilizing the climate change comes from this as well. And so we go down, I think this is where we go down in this one, and sure enough, applications in research for landscape genomics. So we're now attaching a word genomics that's out of place from the actual use as an adjectival use of the term by these people of sustainability. And we see here that the in applications of research, it says landscape genomics has provided an opportunity to examine potential implications. How questionable are we going to get here? Potential implications of climate change based on how organisms respond to changing temperature and climate. Totally nothing to do with DNA or that line of things. This is completely a new use of an old term. It is done to get fit your favor, to make it sound sciency. And it makes no sense right up front, but we look past that. I appreciate the creative use of words. Let's not throw all that out and say, oh, I'm just a curmudgeon about it. No, I appreciate it. I try to do my little bit of creativity as I can. I'm not necessarily so good at it, but I try. But this guy's actually making a profession out of it. And in a way that I've found in my research is detrimental to most everybody except them. Let me just go to the heritable knowledge framework document I found. What is this heritable knowledge? Well, this is where you start finding that it's connected to the indigenous, one of the three stalking horse subject matters of the United Nations and everything sustainable. Women, indigenous, and the women, children, and the indigenous. And I don't know why people don't quite understand, well, where did the men go? Is because this is not the Gaian principle. This is not the advantage they get by trying to push it. But Heritable Knowledge Framework is a document written by Dr. David Martin, and it says Heritable Knowledge Framework and the development of communal innovation trusts. Communal innovation trust, an ethical framework for development, stewardship, and trade, is globalism. I don't know what else to say. This is their version of it. This is authored by Dr. David Martin. It's somewhat terrifying to actually have found. I guess watching the horror up front is pretty scary. But anyway, as countries in Oceania face increased pressure, this document goes on, starts to say, from industrial imperatives imposed as conditions of trade and economic cooperation agreements, the fundamental divergence in basic assumptions regarding individual property interests becomes evident. And this is an interesting problem, because any targets that he says communal innovation trust, there is no individual property eventually here. He also has to go through and give a disclaimer that says he doesn't take any copyright in this. And this is a patent guy. The guy knows intellectual property. he has to assure people that he's not taking any effort. This is like, here's a gift. Then he speaks about industrial and intellectual property frameworks, principally defined by U.S. and U.S. concepts of tract and property law. And this is what he targets. They're going after the property. This is what leverage funding does, if you don't understand it. Because those people with property that's taxable, they're pretty well stuck because they have no knowledge about what's gone on and how to protect the property and how it's been co-opted. And through these paragraphs, you see what inheritable knowledge is as they define it. But you get to the bottom where it defines heritable knowledge in the document, and he says, "I use the term heritable knowledge rather than." The convention, traditional knowledge, as it captures the dynamic, temporal, and perpetual evolution inherent in stewardship of knowledge, stories, cultural and artistic expressions, spiritual and social awareness, healthcare, and ecological practice. Healthcare? What's that have to do with anything? But there it sits. What's he talking about, well, about this COVID? Now he's presenting the improper use of healthcare relative to a communicable disease crisis fraud. But what's healthcare have to do with this heritable knowledge that way relative to corporate investment globally? Is an indication this is not the document that is so warm and fuzzy. And he makes a distinction between traditional knowledge and this heritable knowledge. Why? Because when you make the term, you control it. And now he's defined it for us. And he's defined it to include this healthcare, which I want to focus on for this discussion, because it's what we're looking at with the COVID, what's being exposed, but where they might be going under this communal trust setup for the indigenous of the islands of Oceania. And we go on, additional traditional imposes a temporal assumption. While this knowledge is constantly evolving and will continue to do so in vibrant, resilient cultures. Vibrant and resilient are words of sustainability, globalism. And he talks about the global innovation commons, that this document is part of that. Well, what's that? He talks about the WTO. He talks about everything in here, multinationals, that is what's coming up in the future for the future we want relative to corporate public-private partnership control in ways that are, if you will, leveraged, they're guaranteed and secured by the positions of the parties being attacked that they don't even know they're being attacked on warm and fuzzy concepts, because why wouldn't you want to keep people healthy? Why wouldn't you want them to not be, you know, the housing and food and all these securities that they give? Those are all intangible things that are being stolen from you, and they're controlled. And so global innovation commons. You can't have global and you can't have communal and have private. I can just tell you that when you go read through all this, and I guess that's the problem. Again, this document, we could go through it for hours, showing how this is a document that explains exactly what globalism intends to do to people. And you find the most vulnerable, which you say you're protecting, and you exploit them. And he talks about exploitation, but doing it ethically. That seems unethical on its face. But at any rate, what is a global innovation commons? Can I just read the first sentence? Global innovation commons on thecommons.org, a new database of patent-free technologies will make green innovation more available to all. They're placing this in the global commons, put this in a database which makes green innovation more available to all. What about if you hear new green deal, a green new deal here, folks? This is what Dr. David Martin put together to be put into this. And let's go to what they're doing in the health area for intangible investment. And I move and found about where we're moving through this COVID, where the, if you will, end game. It's not really the end game, but it's a continuing transformation condition. As we can't just do it in one. It's not going to be the great reset like someone flipping a switch. It's going to happen incrementally like everything else. They keep testing how much you'll take, and boy, we took a lot. I told you that we would. I was hoping for not, but this is what happens. Go to Region Stockholm. You know, I couldn't make heads or tails of what Region Stockholm really is. It apparently looks like a government maybe sitting over Stockholm, which is exactly how regional governments work. You also look in the last document of David Martin. They talk about the local, national, local, and regional control. Well, what's regional? You don't have regions in the United States of America, not as a governmental of a government. You do have it as governance overlays, which are what the mechanism by which they strip you of your wealth. They become the authority. It's what Rosa Quarry was fighting down in the Bay Area. It's the same kind of veneering. Regional Stockholm. Facts about health impact bond. Health impact bond background. This is intangible investment in a region of controlled by a corporate. Essentially, it's a corporation. This is the type of investment vehicle that you come under, that someone invests in, that someone else makes the profit for. The warm and fuzzy here is health, you think you're going to have health. No, these are just investment vehicles. These are some of the things that's included in what David Martin does. And so I just want to point out, I guess here, I promote lots of people and their information, but you have to know, you have to take everybody on their own merit and for what they do. Embracing the concept of somebody doesn't mean they're completely embraced, especially in these times of deception. I don't know where David Martin is relative to the implementation of this. He's on the outs and he's working a way to get himself in, because if he comes and shows you how it was a fraud, now you believe in him and you believe in all his solutions, all his ethical thinking, coming underneath, as I saw in the church, speaking through the Bible. He appears to me to be too intelligent to have made the mistake to be duped, to move through the financial sector, no less, and use all the words of sustainability and globalism. And globalization, I guess, at the other point. And so I want to caution here. We got to be very careful who we're listening to and to what length and time. And this is why I ask everybody of me, just don't listen to me blankly. If you find something I say that makes sense, go research the source of it. If you see what's going on and you think I'm correct, go make sure you know the foundation for it. Don't take anything I've said as gospel. Don't do that. I don't know what mistake I may have made. I tried not to. But you don't just walk blindly from anybody. This guy, and it's really, in a way, I feel kind of, it's a shame in my mind that, guy's really brilliant about what he does. But the extended connections linguistically is not a good outcome here for people when he gets involved. And he was properly placed to see it all. It's probably why he was properly placed. He's an insider, if you will. Maybe on the outside, I don't know, but I can see them moving this. They're moving into your COVID, your passports, your social credit is the health impact bond. How do you think they're going to get you into that? This is all the background information they need to create the file to monetize it. That's the blockchain, if you haven't figured it out. So, facts about the health impact bond is the intangible investment that he's talking about. In health, relative to COVID, is what? And this is done in Stockholm, in Sweden, where we were told there was hardly really any problems. But you see, this popped right up out of there. Isn't that anomaly kind of intrigue you just a little bit, where nothing really happened? This type of a health bond pops up, which is to cover all that? But again, it's finances. This is no health. Both in Sweden and globally, you see, the connection to immediately promote what's going on here. They'll tell you exactly where the scope of this is. Both in Sweden and globally, the healthcare sector is facing numerous challenges with aging population, strong increases in lifestyle diseases and chronic illness, rising medical costs, that's their problem, and need to find ways to structure health care. It's not structuring health care. They're talking about structuring the finances. And to do that, they're going to make a health bond. And to do that, the city has to do that, has to tax somebody. And this is like Obamacare and then Trumpscare as well. This is all hidden underneath these other terms and how they start to work. You know, I'm not going to read more. This is in the list of what David Martin said he covers for intangible asset financing in something called a health bond, already working. And I'm telling you, this passports and this COVID nonsense and this track and trace and this the technological connections they're doing, and then the vaccines themselves are going to create the ID for you, which is put into this blockchain database, which is monetized not for you and not your benefit, but for these global financiers. And what I see, Stockholm, interesting how these nerd words come together. Stockholm showing us they have a health impact bond, bondage, financial bondage. The term Stockholm Syndrome came to mind. So how far away are we on this? It's like repeating the condition that we're here. Stockholm Syndrome is a condition which the hostages develop a psychological bond with their captors during captivity. You've done that when you're locked down in the prison, folks. Didn't even struggle even a little bit. Feel sympathy for how they're saving everybody while they have you locked down. Sound familiar? These people have us wired, folks. They really have us wired. They know how to extract from us and exploit us. And then I found another thing about David Martin. Like I said, just read his bio. However, I don't know how much is fabricated or not. If he's done the things he said in here, like I said, he's a very intelligent man. Almost scarily intelligent. He's connected. All right? They go through and tell us all about all that he's done. And it's, again, the spokesman is repeated here, the spokesman of global spokesman, folks. You got to listen to the connectivity here. Of global financial and intangible asset accountability and quality reform. All right? These are the movers and the shakers. And they're talking about, they finally get down to your land right. That's another thing about that other document. Again, they get to the land. They eventually get to the land to control it. And they throw it in and they say, well, isn't it improper to have, you know, you have to have communal land so it's treated correctly. Well, what they bring in, the adjective they throw in is they then bring in the new definition that it includes a whole bunch of other things that really weren't part of any cultural or indigenous belief system. And it's done for a financial purpose as well, on top of that, to exploit and extract from those innocent people. And we see this all the time in the United States relative to the Indian tribes having corporations that will be deciding things completely different than the people themselves. And I've exposed all of this stuff before relative to DAPL and the water and all these other things and the Klamath River dams and all that stuff. It's over and over and go over this exploitation. Preying upon intangible warm and fuzzy feelings and things, and the intangible also relative to stating it's healthcare, but it's not. What you're looking at is everyone's trying to cover their corporate bottom line, and then you get into the bottom line, you have a triple bottom line in sustainability, and it's each one of those pillars that you look at the documentation, and these documents speak completely to it. And this guy does a good job linguistically in altering what it sounds like he's doing, but my eyes pick up that it's exactly the same thing. And so I got a tab for you to read about Dr. David Martin. He's a doer, folks. I can just tell you that. But he might, for my mind, he might be too smart for me. And smart is S-M-A-R-T. It's not what we normally think in the street, what the word smart means. It's a system. I have from Forbidden Knowledge website, I'm talking about a plandemic. It lists about a lot of people involved, and Dr. David Martin was involved in there with some references to things he said. He makes a comment relative to patents and what should have been patented, and what should not have been relative to the law. But he doesn't, I don't think he actually states that correctly. And he says, he kind of points out that in both directions, if it's natural, it couldn't be patented. And if it was somehow synthetic, it would be illegal because it would violate the bioweapons treaty. And this is that other blind spot that, and it's not, maybe not a blind spot as I see it now, but this link explains that he says that. And I wanted to point out something about that as I was reading through it. It points out, I think it's the why he supposedly has this blind spot, that when you use anybody who uses the term novel means it's synthesized, it means it's not natural, it means it's patented or patentable, the word novel, by definition. In the law that he talks about he's imposing or he's using and he wants to cite to, that's what that means. That it's been a question to him that he has to go prove it to you by all the documents and patents has been an interest to me. But he also leaves out a bit where there is a type of, it's by definition synthetic, there is something you can patent relative to RNA or DNA. In this case, it's the RNA, it's that single-strand messenger. That is patentable. And that's not necessarily illegal. And that doesn't necessarily violate the biological weapons and chemical weapons treaties. And I'm bringing up something here. I hope you're leading with my thought, with what I'm saying. I hope you start leading into what this does, because we're back to the other assertion relative to that dual-use condition. It isn't just illegal because they synthesize RNA. That's a novel thing. But it is, by definition, synthetic. Again, I don't need to go on and on about the patents. The fact that they exist shows you these are all synthesized. These are not natural things that they're wanting to put in your body. That he still has a question about this. This guy, who's really intelligent, I just can't believe he's not, is a fascination to me. That his presentation in a church to God-fearing people about God-fearing things, but promoting a humanistic view, was truly a thing to witness in a way, if you picked up on that. Yeah, Rob, as I look over Rob Works, who's menticided. In fact, I was going to make a comment about that. Interesting how the word works out. But going back to the complementary DNA, the Supreme Court, I think, has said that complementary DNA can be patented. It's what, single-stranded novel stuff. Isn't that what the mRNA technology is said to do? That's a transcription condition, isn't it? And so he's not necessarily he's not correct on that. And so that leaves open the problem, which he keeps looking past, which is all of this is synthetic. All of it. And nothing is ethical about it. Nothing. And he doesn't really, he kind of makes that a question while he tries to go through the proofs. And so, again, he says stuff, but you have to really listen carefully. I don't know what I've missed. I only know what I've found that doesn't quite line up with what he says. And so there's this truth and this falsity moving through. Even if it's unintentional, we can't buy into all of it. We have to really keep our head on a swivel about this. So he says it's a violation of the treaties, but Title 50 sits there, and it says that Title 50 says you're not supposed to make these bioweapons and chemical weapons and radiological weapons. They're all illegal, except when another condition happens. And that's the thing that I find interesting, that he blows right by, which means he's not blowing right by it, because he knows exactly what he's talking about. And he's been ignoring the condition and problem of Title 50 the entire time, the thing I talk about all the time. If you have by definition, dual use is required to allow it in Title 50. And if you don't, if it looks like it's a weapon, you then have to state something. You then have to qualify it would fit the exception, otherwise it would be illegal. And we get that proof out of an interesting interaction, which I think is a charade. I think it's a setup. And it's the Rand Paul Fraudchi Senate discussion. Now, I've pulled up a link for you. It says, the title of this is, "You Do Not Know What You Are Talking About. Fauci and Paul Clash at a Senate Hearing." Fauci's saying that Rand Paul doesn't know what he's talking about. Well, they're kind of talking alongside each other. And yet, inside that discussion, Fraudchi says it's not gain of function. He tells Rand Paul this is not gain of function because Rand Paul was trying to say you lied to say, or that he lied to the Senate about that situation. And when he said that on that interaction, I don't know what people listen to. This is what I listen to. When he repeated it was not gain of function, my mind immediately went to Title 50 and said, then he's going to have to define how it wouldn't be a violation under Title 50. Because all biological weapons and chemical weapons and radiological weapons are illegal, or devices are illegal. Except, and do you know if you listen to this, I'll give you a link to it, you listen to this, what he's talking about. After he says it's not gain of function, then Fauci brings it up. And Ryan Paul doesn't even, I don't think he understands it. He doesn't counter. He brings up the quote, "It protects against clinically apparent disease and it protects extremely well against hospitalization and death." What's that mean? Right after saying it wasn't a gain of function, he then had, by Title 50, had to declare, because then it would be a biological weapon, but he had to provide the exception. He had to provide that it had a good use. And he declared it immediately on the record. These people know what they're doing, folks. They know exactly what they're speaking to, whether you hear it or don't. So when I heard it was not gain of function, when Fauci says it wasn't gain of function, and understand we're talking SARS-CoV-2, the thing that's novel, the thing that has no test, well, unless you agree with the CDC's test, which isn't a test, and that's been controlled. My question was, when he said it's not gain of function, was immediately, then how was it beneficial? How is this condition, this vaccine, beneficial? How is this SARS-CoV-2 stuff dealing with China beneficial and not going to be prohibited? Pursuant to Title 50, that's when he says he gave two reasons. It protects a clinically apparent disease, and it protects very well against hospitalization and death. Even if he's wrong there, he has made a statement of exception to make it that what they're doing is not illegal under Title 50. He did it on purpose. He had to. So then what's the basis? I'm thinking, well, what's the basis of the assertion? He can say it, but the challenge now comes, and this is where Rand Paul should have asked, where there is no test for the cause of the disease, and to which the mitigation measure must reasonably be applied. These are all standards in your local communicable disease code. They identify the thing they're going to mitigate, and it's to prevent it. If you don't have that identified, then how is it anything reasonable? How is any measure reasonably applied then to a mere clinically apparent disease? What's that? What's clinically apparent disease? It's nothing but an observation. He's no longer talking about SARS-CoV-2, and that's the problem. How do you have a clinically apparent disease, the mitigation factor of which it can be reasonable without knowing the infectious agent? And that's where you see Rand Paul fail. That's where Rand Paul needed to ask to strip Fraudchi of his cloak of injectability under Title 50. With those two answers, he gets to come under the exception which allows them to do what they're doing. And Rand Paul, the doctor that he is, didn't know how to ask that, point that out, or then do something even better. Prefer the authority, not from Fauci, but the local public health official, and then identify where his state, use that code to find it in his state, which he couldn't do. In other words, what I'm saying, Rand Paul would have done the country a service to go and identify his local public health official, didn't do that either. And so this is why this whole entire thing is wrong. It conforms and confirms what I've told you about the Title 50 connection. If you understand what you have read and what's expected, when Fauci said it was not a gain of function, he then had to come up with the exception, and then he did, proves Title 50 is working, and these people are coming underneath the color of that conformity, and they're not unlawful. And until someone outs that, this thing's going to continue against us. And I don't know who it's going to be. I don't have a clue who that's going to be, the one that comes forward to do that correctly. I hope you understand. There's a dynamic that went on. It's like they're telling you the truth right there. Rand Paul's, they're playing, I don't even know what the characters are. Rand Paul's playing this good cop, maybe good cop, bad cop nonsense. Again, Rand Paul believes in vaccines. He didn't make an exception for these newfangled destruction and death serums. I'm pausing. I hope you're putting together the problem here relative to what Dr. Martin is talking about, what he does, his deeds, relative to what he's avoiding in this silence I tell you to listen for, relative to a knowledge base you have to have. You have to have the foundation of knowledge in you. You don't have to be studied so deep that you're an expert, if you will. Your license, you don't want to be licensed, it's just the ethics. See, that's just the ethics license to go commit harm. You don't want into that. You want to see the reality of what's going on. You want to know enough to be able to be discerning in what people are talking about. I'm only talking on what I see. I'm sure there's people that have other thoughts that look at this that could see even more. And I really dislike wanting to condemn anybody, so I'm going to leave all of this until I'm informed different. I have to take a more negative view. I'm not going to condemn, but I'm not going to buy in. They're all essentially enemies to us. Nobody has denounced the incremental destruction of our ways of life anywhere in any country. And that's why I take the more strict view. I've told you, I'd rather prepare for the worst and act against the worst. And then find out that it wasn't that bad than to not have understood how bad it really was and walk right into a 2x4 slammed in my face. But what's coming is the gun shooting you down. In Australia, I understand it's being taken down to the ground and injected with these properties, these patented chemicals, which create structures in you which will be identifiable as your biometrics for your incremental technological inclusion for the purposes of someone like a Dr. David Martin to innovatively cause investment in you through intangible values. And the value is to the companies to reduce their costs. And you become, remember, that human capital? Yeah. You folks that argue about a legal fiction that they've made you, well, they're going to just, this is coming on steroids. You're going to be the walking fiction. You don't remember, Microsoft said the DNA, they can pack a whole bunch of information in your DNA, in protein folds, essentially is what it ends up being. That can be created too as RNA, couldn't it? So they can program anything they want, and that could be your identification. Everyone thinks, oh, we're going to do my picture. I'm going to have a fingerprint. No, the biometrics is going to be these chemicals that are injected into you that are beyond maybe most of our imaginations on how they manipulate proteins. And they become proprietary, just as David Martin is promoting, for the global reset and the transformation of societies. And we have a little bit of time to start calling this out. A German court, if we move on here, says Facebook's hate speech ban rules violate speech rights. A 2018 decision to temporarily ban two users in Germany because of their comments about migrants posted on the platform has come back to bite Facebook, since the country's federal Supreme Court has now ruled that this case of censorship violated the user's right to free speech. Well, it's about time. Then why in Germany and not the United States, for those of you living in the United States? Maybe any other rule of law and democracy oppressor country maybe should wake up here. There is a limit. And in this case, it's not the government telling the Facebook what to do. It's that someone who had a free speech right has that right. Obviously, when you read through the story, you're going to find out Facebook's going to put their twist on it, and they're going to continue. The point is that until someone stops and presses back, even in the face of these injustices, we are not going to see anything slow down or stop or even bring a question. And I think that's maybe one of the big points here, not a problem, but the point here is that you become that example. The resistance is you just doing, you finding the narrow path, and you travel that path. And you keep all the ruffians and the highway robbers off of the path. And you learn how to do that. We have to do that now because there's no one else they're going to steal from but the asymptomatic, the one on the narrow path. They've plundered everything else to the point that even fraud is law and fraud is finance. And no one said anything. And so they said, well, let's just up and hold my beer. Hold my beer on this. Let's go further. We're going to now monetize and control and invest in people themselves beyond what you folks who think that you've already been bought into a system, beyond that. I don't know. I just sit here thinking, are you listening, folks? This whole COVID thing brings on the chemicals they're putting in, gives you that biometric identity, which is this thing they're using to then control you through the digitization of the world and through things like blockchain and the control of all that. And wearables becomes important now. Your injection is a wearable. It's a communication system. They make the interfaces so that now that they're bringing on the ability to interact with the biology that you are and interfere with it. And the guy, and the premier, I guess it is, or whatever, in Australia told you, they're blaming you for that. You have no complaint now. So while we still have a little bit of time in Germany to speak, you folks in Germany, speak up. You got some time. I also find here where the UN is being promoted, the policies of the UN are being promoted. You also see the truth of the capacity, why it has to be built, because they don't have any, and they're always behind the times, for as forward-thinking they are, as much as they want to interfere with future generations. You'll see that in David Martin's stuff, too, if you read carefully enough. They promote like they're going to help the future. In fact, that's only helping them, the financiers of the world. This report comes out, show you how far behind everybody is. UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, quote, authorities are viewing their own people as an enemy. Do I need to read more? I mean, really, these titles tell me all I need to know. I hope they tell you a ton. That we didn't need to have him tell us that, first of all. And where has this guy or gal been? Then you read far enough to know, is it a guy or gal? Does it matter? At any rate, we were told when, that the PATRIOT Act, that we were enemy combatants in our own country. If you think January 6th was anything special, it was really what? Did I tell you? The fulfillment of this thing they started at 9/11, where all the people would be enemy combatants to the United States, which is the government in a district, not a state. Where has the UN been to finally see that the authorities view their own people as enemies? If we couldn't tell it by being everybody being put in prison in a lockdown under fraud. And so the UN is so far behind, and you know they'll never really solve anything because it's all driven by this they call it nation state. I really have a problem with that term because nations are not states. They're nations. The nation state was a way to put them inside the UN as something that was a fiction as well in another non-governmental capacity, this adjectival type thing. You define the noun by a descriptor is not the thing. But we were told in 9/11, after 9/11 with the Patriot Act, that almost came out almost quicker than the PATRIOT Act almost came out almost faster than the Twin Towers fell, right? Almost quicker than Building 7, right? The thing came right out. People were enemy combatants to their own nations is not even a question. That we see this now, as I've said, Operation Hindsight 2020, would the people recognize what happened to them in 9/11? And would they turn to defend themselves during Operation Hindsight when I told you, right breaking into 2020, December 31st, Operation Hindsight 2020, we were going to come into a new oppression, advancing the next step of what 9/11 started, and it would be the worst that society could face, which would be a medical attack, a purported medical attack, where they could throw in medical controls and medical martial law, essentially. And haven't you seen that? That we hear this now, after the thing rolls out a little bit, former Obama official demands a no-fly list for unvaccinated adults. If you think that this thing's giving up, if you think that we're going to stop, all the vaccination was enough, this wasn't about enemy combatants, that this wasn't about keeping people from moving about the country, if this wasn't about everybody being an enemy to the government. There's a former Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security under President Obama, Juliette Kayyem, called Tuesday for Biden administration to restrict the unvaccinated from flying by placing them on a no-fly list. KM claimed in The Atlantic that a no-fly list for unvaccinated adults is an obvious step that the federal government should take due to TSA PreCheck, which divides passengers into categories according to how much of a threat to the government thinks they pose. Now, how are you a threat to the government when the authority is not in the United States or the TSA for public health, but is the local states, and they're supposed to follow the law, and they haven't declared you to be a risk? Isn't that just facially arbitrary and capricious? It's more and it's worse. The point is, it's very easy to get to the point of it all. As I've told you, you're going to have to. A lot of people say, I'm not flying. I'm not going to do that or any of that other stuff. It's not the point about it. The point is, this is how they're doing the encroachment. You're being told you are an enemy combatant and you are a threat for being healthy. That means the future is going to be unhealthy for you and healthy for it. This is no different than the public-private partnerships and the things that someone like Dr. David Martin promotes in intangible asset investment. So your enemy combatants, they're reminding you, as I told you they would start doing, they would remind you that we're in the 9/11 condition. You are a second-class citizen. You're a threat. You're presumed to be a threat. And they're doing this without the authority to do so. And across the nation, I hear crickets. It's pretty fascinating. I'm really, in a way, I don't know if I'm getting, becoming overwhelmed at the lack of response and what that might mean. And like today, I must have 50 tabs that we can go through. I hope I get to most of them. There's so much to cover. There's so many things that's coming at us. And any one of which anybody should be able to see that says, that's not right. All you mothers and fathers with sons and daughters in school. I started out with how you can, someone's trying to help you step up. I don't think they have the complete idea about what we just now talked about you need for your sons and daughters and yourself. The identification that you are not been determined to be the threat. I've told you this is going to be about that threat. They're coming out to exploit it. So it was another story that came on based in this censorship, based in this control, based in this attack, if you will, which, again, I have a problem with on some points, but is happening. But then I wonder to what end. It kind of follows along why David Martin stepped up, and then when you see what he does, how, if you look at it in a certain way, it actually is preparing for the next step of implementation of servitude and oppression. Even though they're telling you the truth. They're telling you the truth, and you can understand it, but by the time you figure that out and didn't do anything, it won't matter. They're on to the next. They're already moved down the road. They've already got it worked out. You're underneath all this servitude. You can't even, you don't even know where it's coming from. And it's all to secure those intangible health bonds. This is what's fascinating about this. If you haven't figured out what they're doing, the security is to secure those bonds. And it's going to impose further the demands against the asymptomats and those that are not complying. It becomes now a national security matter. It becomes a public interest matter. And it's all based in fraud. And no one seems to want to be able to call it out. I don't get that. But here we have a different type of censorship. You can speak over there in Germany, but you can't speak in the United States of America is this offset. But something else. And somebody that I don't want to really speak ill of. I think the information that is mostly produced is good. But there's always this connection, this profit-taking, this whatever exploitation thing that goes on. Dr. Mercola succumbs to censorship, is what we're being told. Now, something has happened to Dr. Mercola. Somebody's attacked him, he says, personally. So I'll give you a link. In a newsletter you can get from Dr. Mercola. He's announcing he's going to be pulling his stuff relative to COVID treatments or cures or whatever that were prophylactic or alternatives, none of which you've heard from your local health official, which you should have by law been told to you as well. And so this is plausible. They're shutting him out. What I will have a problem with on this, and I'm wondering who these people are. I don't know Dr. Mercola. I don't know what goes on. I don't know what everybody's working for. I don't know what hesitation that goes on. I see him as I see some other people that without these connections I would admire. I've mentioned them. I won't mention them now. They're coming in a way in the model of AJ in a way as well. And this wanting to make a financial, having a financial interest in things of the dire destruction of society is really has a kind of grips me a little bit here. Maybe I'm just jealous. Actually, I'm not, but maybe I am. You could say that, I suppose. There's always that argument. But I don't like that he's being censored at all. That's for sure. But to have him come out and announce that he's going to pull all his stuff, that's one thing, and that's the wrong thing. But to say he's only going to produce it for 2 days and then pull it, and then he promotes a book, which explains the COVID and the problems and the treatments, where he's saying that he's being attacked because of that, and in ways that are personal to him and he's not going to discuss, is an anomaly that I don't understand. That doesn't make sense to me to keep him to embrace too far, except that in Germany, I guess we have free speech, and in the United States, we don't. And what gets convoluted is this connection to money and things like that. It's why you don't see me pushing money too much. Getting, pay-per-view or whatever the heck we do, whatever's common in the in social media to monetize. I've just, long time ago, before all that was an idea, I just said, this is not the way I would want to go. I've seen how government goes after anybody who who utilizes the fiat. So I decided a long time ago I'm going to have to live somehow without it. Now, not 100%, but it's not something I'm going to ask for. It's not something I'm going to readily accept. Doesn't mean I don't. There's realities in it, but I'm not going to put myself in systems that are able to track me and track what I do and track the people that would give through this system that's coming down upon us. And this anomaly that I'm going to have to pull all my content, but I'm going to put it up for 2 days and then I'm going to pull it back down and here buy my book is a problem for me. Then I went and I found the video for this on YouTube. So he wasn't pulled from YouTube. And I'll just tell you, there's something, it's maybe just a perception. Certainly everybody has their perception. But this guy looks like he's trying to sell me something, even while he's telling me he's being censored and that he's going to pull his stuff. It's too much like, look, believe what I have to tell you. And he doesn't give up the whole entire time. It almost becomes like an act. I couldn't even watch. I don't think it was 20, 30 seconds. So while he is being censored, and we need to understand this is what you are. You're the enemy going to be censored. There's also like a bit of license given. For what? For commerce. And I don't trust any of it. And part of me feels bad to even say that. I may like all these guys and gals. I don't know. I like lots of people. But I've learned over the years that there's a problem in this society. You're watching the insanity of it, and there's this latency of this fence straddling is not good. The lukewarm part of this really gets me a bit. And so this is like Dr. David Martin. I am absolutely appreciative that he comes forward with the truths that he has. Not unlike Dr. McCullough coming with these alternatives, the things that he does. And maybe I don't really care that he's selling product at that point. Okay, great. Sometimes it's hard to get good product. He may have had good product. It was good. I don't know. But to start straddling the fence of I'm being stricken and censored, but I still can speak a little bit, there's problems. For David Martin to say, we're going to expose this fraud, but then he has his hands in the very next step of what all this is going to do, has a problem for me. And I wanted you to know about it today. That's one I started to wear on me a bit. I said, I keep talking about all these people, but I don't really believe in any of them. I don't really embrace any of it 100%, even not even close. And I wanted you to at least know that, for those of you that listen and start to apply. We have a really steep learning curve. I don't care what way we go on this. And we're going to have to go ahead and do it. Otherwise, we're out of shape. We're out of line. Let me see if I can move quicker because we're going to get some evidence of that. A big story came up. A lot of people sending me emails and information on a situation that happened in Kanukistan. Before that, I want to go to China. What we're adopting in, like we did the lipid from China that all the companies are putting into their death jabs. We also, as the United States authorities, we're also incorporating Chinese surveillance tech. And it's being used in the United States to track criminals in real time. That was important, and I won't read the story more than move on from there. What did I just say? The United States is using Chinese surveillance. I told you there's no difference in the social credit. All this stuff's going to be the same. Chinese surveillance tech to identify criminals. I just told you, PATRIT Act, you are all deemed an enemy combatant threat to the national security. You're all criminals. You're presumed to be a national security threat when they say so. That's the memo, folks, the murder memo, if you recall about that, me talking about that. So what China offers, the United States authorities, the land of the free, home of the brave, right, is picking up to use against us. It's not new news. It's just shocking to see how much of a lie they're willing to say, oh, it's the China virus, and then they're buying all the Chinese products to make the virus actually the jabdemic, which is causing it. I hope you're all noticing this variance they talk about. They're now up to Lambda, but you can see the talking head script kiddies that talk through the governors. They're still speaking of the Delta variant when it's moved on to Lambda, so-called. But it all started after the jabdemics. I told you that it would. There it is. And they're not variants. They're just the byproducts of the byproducts. And then how did they know for sure anyway, right? There's no test. So we can go on and keep believing in all this nonsense. Where it's going is to get enough people jabbed and proprietary stuff put in them, as I told you about the proprietary problem of these patented RNAs in your body, creating matrices of types of communication systems and the ability to communicate and identify you. That's your biometric signature. And that was fabricated and novel and proprietary that they will then pool up in these vast human capital arrangements for fiscal and financial construct, which will be secured to them by your compliance of government control and the tyranny that they bring the military and or the cops on to prove and protect that. Coming soon, America's own social credit system. If you didn't think what I was telling you before, coming from China, the pivot to China was actually going to be a reverse reflection of what you see over there is this fiscal thing coming on in the controls. We have a social credit system coming. The new domestic war on terror kicked off by a riot on January 6th that's prompted several web giants to unveil predecessors to what effectively could become a soft social credit system by the end of the decade. If your normal loan credit system wasn't the same thing, this being modified. The point is for this, they pointed out here the January 6th riot. And if you look at how those people are being treated, they're being treated as terrorists. And they're locked down and you're not going to hear from them. And they're not many, very few are being released, if any. And this is the premise that starts this. I wanted to remind you this story this way because this is the continuing movement of the war of terror against you, started 9/11, now moved into social credit system. That they are blaming on the people that tried to go to their house and their representatives, the constituents of which that house that night embraced democracy instead of the republic. And this Chinese social credit system is a combination of government and business surveillance that gives citizens a score that can restrict and the ability of individuals to take actions such as purchasing plane tickets, acquiring property, or taking loans, perhaps because of behaviors. This is behavior management, right? This is all the sustainability. This is also the list of things that the vaccine passport's connected to, isn't it? There's going to be a joining of this, and it's all going to be on that blockchain, and that's all going to be monetized, and it's going to turn into this thing. It's already coming to the United States. If you didn't understand how fast this stuff has already been in the works and moving along at breakneck, at warp speed, folks. And we move on to the next story. Those supposed Congress people or senators inside. The GOP reps press conference after being denied entry to prison where January 6th prisoners were held. And when you go listen to this GOP, the few folks, maybe they're good, maybe they're working on something. They go to the prison that they're going to have oversight for funding. None of this is in their control anyway. They cannot even get into the prison where these people are being held. They are duped into walking out. And then they are locked, the door locked behind them. They have a press conference to tell us how that is working. Again, this to me is showing you you're an enemy combatant, and even your representatives, which would be no more a status actually, don't even get access. And it's beyond the purse now. And so there's a whole other thing going on. To move us into this thing I told you was coming and going to do relative to what's really going on. It's a military conquest in an international base, which is always based in finance. And I'm not intelligent enough to figure it all out. I just know I've watched all the deeds of it. I've watched the clues. I've watched the crumbs. I've watched the bright lights. I've watched the neon signs develop. And it's here. I don't even know. I mean, I say that. I want to get afraid. I finally want to just get afraid. It's just not looking too good. So your representatives can't even get into the prison to make sure that you're being treated correctly. This is all on the heels of them saying that you cannot, you're going to be not on the no-fly list. You're not going to be able to be on the travel list because you're a national security threat. And we all forget that this all started when? Way back when you were determined to be an enemy combatant of the state back in 9/11. And nobody has stopped it. So they're all in on it. This is all just a facade. And it's going to take the people to step up. I'm hearing some people around me, they're getting really frustrated because when are the people going to step up? When does the ropes come out? When do the pitchforks and torches come out? When? I'm even being challenged for what I do. You do what you do doesn't mean anything. And I have to agree at some level. But there's something about being the continual witness and try to bring the example, be the witness, and help people to do that for themselves that keeps screaming to me to continue. Other than that, I'm agreeing. It's a fool's errand, it seems. But I'll just say I have faith. And I would ask, would some of you not let me and us down? There's a reality being shown to us. Are we going to resist that? And we have to do it in proper ways because this is really the war. This is a battle. You just don't want to be dumb. You just don't want to be stupid about how you fight this battle. And it's not necessarily too straightforward, except there is a straightforwardness about it once you see it. And here's where we start to get the consolidation coming on, and I had to drop a whole bunch of links even to this. About this coming on, I may talk about it next week. Coinbase CEO warns of sweeping surveillance for crypto holders in infrastructure bill. Now, they talk about roads and streets and this and that, but infrastructure is the capacity building to keep the surveillance even more. They're talking about Coinbase CEO is talking about the crypto holders is inside this infrastructure bill to show you how they pack this thing full of nonsense, that there's going to be taxation and on the crypto, as I told you was coming. And control. And what they've done in the writing is they've made the definition for what a broker is so wild, so broad that it can be anybody that touches crypto. And the story I may just explain it. This is what Ukraine followed. They're going after the miners, but they themselves are going to be using digital currency. And so they tax all that now. And so you're going to be under the scrutiny of the IRS with these ill-defined terms. And so everybody that's been in cryptocurrency, and typically the blockchain, is going to be under that surveillance or under that control. It's not decentralized like everybody was promoting. And then all of a sudden people, oh yeah, it's not decentralized, but they forget where this is going. All this comes underneath social credit eventually. And they're going now after those that tapped into the other fiat that's now being normalized, essentially, and they're doing it through the IRS. And moving in now to what your money and all this is being tapped from you, again, the big sucking sound, the exactions of every kind and no other. What do I just reference but none other than the law again, Title 42, Section 1981. It's right there for us to read if we understood what it meant. And it's for us to, once we see that, now I know you won't go look anyway, but it's for us to see that and decide, do we want to have this continue? Do we want the oppression to continue or do we stop it? How we stop it, I'm not that wise a guy. I'm not that intelligent. I got my questions too. I do have some direct lines on what ought to happen. And now we're to the point I told you in Operation Hindsight, it's going to take, as we saw, leading up to that, the Virginia thing where you have to have the majority of people, or at least the appearance, the perception of a majority of active people pushing back hard in the right ways. And the only thing I saw in the past was if you do that through the objective basis already printed, like the law, the codes that everyone wants to just dismiss, if you do that through the black and white, you're going to be much better in protection where they can't call you the enemy combatant or can't call you the names they call you when they can't answer you because they won't be able to do that either. And when they do, then you out them for that, and now they're exposed. With a lot of people able to pull this off, then maybe we go somewhere. What we won't be able to change is what they're doing to the buying power of your dollar as we move into as Coinbase CEO is telling the crypto people are going to be under surveillance and taxed, and their dollars are going to be sucked away as the best the government can figure out. This dollar purchasing power is now by Wall Street.com being told to us, if you trust him, and it sounded reasonable enough to me to pass it on. The dollar's purchasing power gets zapped, and it's permanent. So someone's recognizing through, as in somewhat of, I guess, an economist here, how this is transpiring before us, and finally comes to the time where feeling comfortable enough to tell us that it's going on, and to tell us and be at least maybe one of the first to identify the final time it's permanent now. This is, we're not going back. One more guy saying the same thing. And so more taxing on you again as they keep bringing austerity forward to get you tied into something, and then they pull it away. Fewer Americans might get the $1,400 stimulus check. Well, that's also tied into taxes, see? It's all the same systems that everyone's involved in. And it's all being centralized, however decentralized they're talking about. And all these subject matter areas are also intangible assets. What's David Martin? Sets up ethical investment strategies for. It was also reminded me, there's something he made a comment, it was innovative finance. That was like what you do when you did loans. That's like in the 80s, started figuring out how to make loans so people could actually buy houses, because contrary to what is happening today, interest rates were at 20-23%. They were changing so fast. When you called in for a loan, you had to call, and you had a discussion for a half an hour. If they hadn't signed the loan papers, you had to call in again to get a new rate. Those were the days. But that was another type of compensation. We're not experiencing that. So they're going to pull more stimulus checks from people who are claimed to be sitting in a better position. But isn't everybody being affected the same? And so they give you these false dualities, these false divisions, in order to start pulling back and taking away what people are going to need. How $1,400 means anything really in today's dirt world, as the dollar purchasing power is going up astronomically, as rents are going up, interestingly, not in urban areas, faster than they are urban areas, which is pretty interesting. I don't know how you keep up on $1,400 anyway, that people keep silent on it. But the point is, this is what the setup of the government's doing to put pressure on everybody. They start pulling it from the so-called rich, and they start feeding it to the so-called poor. But it's all tax money, right? So that's theft. That's extortion. And if we understand what the leverage funding that all that is paying for, then you understand the type of plunder that's been going on. That's always been public-private. Well, not always, but since they've been implementing it, that's been public-private, that's been destroying your country. Fascism has been inside, eating the place out as a cancer. And so we move in now to the United States. We think, what I say about tying all these passports, and they have the same restrictions on them that the social credit controls would be from China. Everyone thinks it's over there. Well, it's already been here. And here we see New York Mayor's de Blasio. It's time for vaccine passports. It's time, folks, for vaccine passports in New York. And then they make a comment here. He reaffirmed his support for a key to New York, NYC, for a key to NYC vaccine passport, which would compel New Yorkers to show proof of vaccination before dining out, going to the gym, or attending culture events, just like social credit in China. But let's look at this term, quote, key, capital K, too, key to New York City. Key is that code key that they will assign to you. This is the computer encryption key that you in the digital virtual social credit world. So he reaffirmed his support for that encryption key, identifying you virtually, if you will. I hate that term, but there it is. Through the vaccine passport, which if there's a scanner, they likely can figure out what vaccine you have, who owned it, and now who you're the proprietary assignment for in the intangible wealth investment field, that you now will have to comply with everything they say to secure the investment, that the government will secure the investment to the financiers. Your conditioning, which they then get by everything you do, but you're signed up. Right now it's a little ad hoc, but they're going to organize it up. And if you aren't doing your jumping jacks when you're supposed to, when you're not doing what you're supposed to and going when you're supposed to do it, when you're not getting out of bed in time, when you're not having the right amount of sleep, when you're not eating the right food, which they may have to make you buy the right food, you're it'll be like EBT card. You can't buy certain things, but you can buy others. Yeah, like that. Only they do that at the point of purchase. All through the phone. The key to New York vaccine passport is the key they're implanting you with in the Jabdemic serum, which is likely an RNA Microsoft product that was putting data inside the DNA protein folds. That will be your biometric identity. It has nothing to do with what we've been led to believe. They're not using your fingerprints. This is all going to be given to you because you've accepted it. And it's going to be your fault. It's your fault. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo asks private businesses to use vaccine passports. So we see two things here in the title. Again, I don't have the time to go in depth. He's asking that they use vaccine passports as a requirement to condition people, right? So he's setting up the resistors to that and trying to get and make reason why that would be valid. And he's gone to private businesses. What have I told you? They would be doing third-party attack, which you cannot impose a constitutional right against. And it's what I've been talking to you about, why you go back to the risk. That's the bottom line, is the risk. That you're not being determined to be the risk that they're trying to do that to. So that's a discrimination of sorts. Whether that's going to mean anything in the future, I don't know. But that's going to be up to us, I think. I don't know what else to say about that. But they're pushing for vaccine passports to third parties. And this is the public-private partnership in a different way, working against your fundamental needs, essentially. UK employers warned, however, over there in the UK, listen up, this is kind of an interesting thing. It may not mean anything, but it's an interesting thing for you to listen for, to use as the avoidance that you might need. UK employers warned forcing vaccine passports in a workplace could be a criminal offense. Now, why it's not a criminal offense everywhere, I don't know, but people need to read this little story here. Your employers in the UK have been cautioned that forcing vaccine passports in the workplace may be a criminal offense amid worries of the no jab, no job practices are gaining ground. And so this is what here Cuomo is discussing, something that if he went to the UK, likely is a crime against people. And it's considered intrusion of their body to do that and be considered discrimination, as it's explained. So for those of you that don't understand some of the legal concepting, this was a neat article to kind of get us into the direction of where we might want to go as we're protecting ourselves against these impositions, such as someone like Cuomo is asking. This guy, I mean, why this guy's in office and how he got protected shows you everything. That he continues there shows you another thing. Firms cannot forcibly vaccinate employees or potential employees, according to the organization that was doing this check, because of this intrusion in your body. And I can't remember now, is it the Seventh Amendment that doesn't allow that as well for us in the United States, that Cuomo is pushing third-party vendors to do? And I've talked about all this. I talked about how you're going to have to address that. A UK transport minister, however, says vaccines will be needed. Forget the passport right now. We're just going to go. Vaccines will be needed for travel forevermore. UK transport minister Grant Shapps says he's talking countries. If you don't think these psychopaths have no limit, says that countries will demand full vaccination forevermore and that young people, quote, won't be able to leave the country without being double jabbed. Wow, pretty interesting how you're now a prisoner in your country because you won't get a death serum. Something that's going to be allow the government to do these things like impact bonds for the very health they're causing, the disease they're causing in you, if you didn't put that together. So forevermore, they're saying now. And why only the young did you catch that? Maybe a little clue that maybe the old aren't going to be around long. Maybe the old have a different statement to make, and they better make it to help the young, those future generations that are going to be exploited ethically. Are you putting two and two together on this, folks, and seeing how dire, how insidious this attack has been? Quebec becomes first Canadian province to introduce vaccine passports. So as we see New York pushing it, Quebec goes ahead and makes them part of the life. Following the footsteps of French President Emmanuel Macron, whose vaccine passport was yesterday upheld by France's Constitutional Court, the Bar Association allowed that, Quebec has drawn up plans for a vaccine passport of its own. I can guarantee you that what went to the Constitutional Court was not a challenge for fraud, nor would they likely have accepted it. And you needed, all you protesters needed to be in that room when the vaccine, the France's Constitutional Court threw you into the street back again and said that you don't have a constitution. That fraud now runs the world. Canada's second largest province by population, its only province that's francophone, announced this week that it plans to introduce a vaccine passport, the first in Canada, the counter of fourth wave of the coronavirus and the spread of the Delta variant, not even making the connection on purpose that the injection, the jabdemic, is what we see in the Delta variant, which is not a variant. And all the science is there. I've talked about it, reported it. Other people, I'm sure, have as well. And this is on the heels or at the same time as something that hit me this week, and I just got to it. Very important to get to today, all in the same line, on how we have to take what we hear, and we have to learn to discern, and we have to have enough in us to be able to discern, and not just to dismiss, because it's not, that's not good. Just dismissing is not going to be workable here. We have to be able to place everything where it belongs and find the utility it offers for us and the lessons to be learned or the pathways to follow or not follow. During the same time of this vaccine passport, there was a court case that came to me, lots of people sending it, videos and article, video, and then I went off and I do my own research because some of the statements that were being made were a little bit too much more than what I could believe would be going on through some such a case. But that's just me. I question things a little bit deeper than just going ahead and accepting what I hear, especially with the internet the way it is. So here we have the people that are injecting you, causing the thing that they're claiming is in surge. What are we doing here? The surge. Surging and sowing a tail is what I think I came up with on that. Surging and sowing the tail of this thing, this fraud, as a viable thing that they're inventing to do what? To put everybody underneath the vaccine passport, which is essentially going to be connected up or is your social credit system, which will all be put in the blockchain, which will all be verified and guaranteed to be what it is, and you're going to have to be in there and to do what? So that they can package that as an intangible investment for the financiers of the world. So says Dr. Martin, right? And so at the same, relatively at the same time, and maybe also there's another thing happened kind of unfortunately to try and bring and bolster this, is a story that comes up, Freedom Fighter Court Victory. Freedom Fighter Court Victory, capital letters, victory, exclamation, ends masking, shots, and quarantine in Alberta. That was the video that I received. And I listened to the video, and things didn't add up to my mind for a couple of reasons. And I'm only going to partially discuss some of this. And going back, and then all of a sudden, lots of people were talking to me that this was going on. And I was trying to keep, you know, just look at it objectively. Again, I had a question after watching the video. Something wasn't quite right when I went to go look at the news, and things started to not equate. And so, again, I'm not making any judgments. I'm just starting to pick up information and trying to synthesize what I'm seeing and make sense of it. Well, with the mind I have about due process and what's supposed to happen, there was some major incongruities, I'll say, at this point, going on. So let me just add here another statement. Someone goes out and writes an article, and I think this is where they offered some of the legal paperwork. And some of it's really good. One of them, I think, is particular, if I got it from this site, actually is the paper that was filed by the government. And that one is what answered most of the problem, what I was having for me, that pointed out to the problem with saying the freedom fighter court victory that ends masking shots and quarantines in Alberta. In fact, unfortunately, it seems, Alberta is ending their COVID-19 restrictions, and then it's attributed to the citizens' court victory. And so I have a link to that. And I want you to watch how this story rolls out and follow it, because it kind of gives us the how you put dots and dots together to maybe come up to the wrong interpretation. And more importantly, it gives us the wrong information that we're going to need when they come maybe against us. And certainly I'm using my experience to do the analysis that you may or may not see or have. I guess I'm offering it so that you can see partly of how I go about doing what I do to analyze the reality of what's going on. You can certainly believe I wanted this to be the truth. And so I've got to verify that exactly, but I've heard enough in the stories being told to see that there's some problems. The next story here, no quarantine for COVID-19 after August 16th. Alberta set to end restrictions was from the Calgary CTV News in Canada. The first one that I said was from the New American, and they're equating the citizens court victory, so-called, with these restriction lifting. The story from the news, however, says it's lifting after August 16th. This is another incongruity. Had that court case shut that down for the fraud of the failure to develop an infectious agent, they wouldn't be waiting till October 16th. And in further review, it looks like this restriction lifting has been on the schedule, so to say, for a time before this case. And this case has some procedural things we're going to want to look at here that are very important. And I'm just going to talk from a basic memory and not go to my notes or anything that I had. It's going to take too long to describe it. This case that was a citizen's victory that supposedly ended these restrictions is not actually how it turns out when you go read and find out what happened during the case. And this is where you have to start understanding what I talk about knowing the battlefield and knowing legal procedure. And I think it is I found a link that goes through and discusses how I started to identify, because I didn't have the paperwork. But they were quoting from the paper, and I accepted the quotes as being correct. And they were talking about he makes a big deal. This Pat King is the gentleman's name, who got cited for violating restrictions. It was a $1,200 fine, and he did some things in court. What my first thought was, he didn't challenge the propriety of the charging instrument, but he did present some, I guess there's a requirement in Kunukistan that you have to present your defense. That I'm not so sure about. So I'm talking a little bit outside of my understanding about this, but I'm just going to go to some due process stuff. When he went to that and he said, his point was that he claimed there was no isolate, and he said nothing more. He didn't fulfill what he needed to do there, just from a procedural standpoint, I'll say. And now this frustrates people, because then they say, well, you have to know so much. Well, yeah, you do, but there's reasons why you have to do it like this. Not necessarily what they just did to him, because what they end up doing is violating him, which now is his real cause. But relative to pointing out that there was no isolate for the SARS-CoV-2 as being the thing that ends everything is not true. And the statements being stated that they didn't produce is not necessarily true under the assumption that they had to. Because what I'm reading there has no evidence showing the Crown comes in, not just the local prosecutor, the Crown for the Queen comes in, which opens up a whole other ball of wax here for me. But notwithstanding that, he says that they claim that he had no evidence showing that the evidence sought is likely material to the provincial court proceeding, contrary to SS 698 and 699 of the Criminal Code. Right off the bat, you need to know the battlefield of the Criminal Code. He apparently doesn't. In fact, everything he did was basically ad hoc, and to find out that the court is his trustee at that, the judge is his trustee at that point, and they're supposed to tell him certain things. They told him to go get a subpoena for the local public health official to be able to identify whether or not she had an isolate. What they said is that he never provided why he needed that, and that likely it was not going to have any materiality to the proceeding, which is on this ticket. He didn't He did not support his need. And this becomes another problem, because then the judge violates him. They know the battlefield and who you're up against. They send him apparently to a justice of the peace who issues a subpoena that doesn't have any jurisdiction. He explains this in the video that I'll send you about this, where he says he got this close, and he puts his fingers up, his little index finger and his thumb. Getting this close, folks, is not a victory. In fact, he missed because he didn't understand that the justice of the peace has no authority to issue a subpoena for the information they had. And when they said they had no evidence showing that he needed it, they also didn't have to produce evidence. So stating that they have no evidence to produce is not stating they couldn't show the isolate. It's a procedural avoidance. And it's critical to understand why he went to the justice of the peace. I don't know. That same judge that was holding the case ought to have had the power to issue the subpoena before that judge. And so we have a due process violation that the trust was broken for his defense, but he didn't know about it. He didn't know anything about setting it up. And I don't, like I said, I would argue that he should have challenged the charge against him for that fraud, and now he would have gotten it on the record. I'm not here really to, I don't know much more than what I'm reading. I don't want to criticize too much. But to say that it was a victory is not perfected by his own statement in a video I found where he says he got that close, and now he's in appeals. And they're going to go after the problem on the due process that he was misguided. It has nothing now to do with the isolate. To say now that Alberta is shutting down their restrictions because of this is improper. More importantly, it sends the wrong message to, I understand, over 8,000 people that have seen that video, that he had a victory, but that close, and that now he has the authority to tell people, or the expertise to tell people what to do. Folks, he doesn't. He doesn't. And so be very careful, again, how we engage and buy into the stories we see and not analyze very carefully what's going on. My hat's off to him for stepping up. I hope he prevails on the appeal for the due process. My view thinks he should have a court, another cause to sue for the conspiracy, it sounds like he states he heard, if he can reduce that to evidence, in the video that I'll send you, where he says he missed it by that much. Missing it by that much is not a victory. It's certainly not going to be a precedent by which the government's going to be removing the restrictions, and where we see Quebec is instituting a vaccine passport. And so we have to understand, boy, you know, I was really encouraged. I was hoping it was right. But when you look at what went on, this is not the example you want to follow. You want to learn from it. And I'm not saying what he tried wasn't the right attempt, but it didn't fulfill what he actually needed to do. Had the 8,000 people listening to that video listened behind the woodshed for even a couple of times, they would have likely realized that he had a little bit more to say and a different, slightly different way to challenge it. And I want you to pick that up and understand that. That's what's been going around the whole of these cases. And we're hoping beyond hope that we find the hero that's going to release us. Folks, you are that hero. That's the only one available to you. And it has to be done more correctly. Now, I don't like it, but that's what we're in. That's the prison, the other style of prison. The Bar Association in Kanukistan is as corrupt as everywhere else. Okay, you still have to free yourself. So again, people that understand and start learning those criminal processes may not be having to ask the judge for help, and may have been able to capture this up. It's different than a civil suit as well. This is, I guess, is the other problem. You can't take the things I'm talking about applied to civil and apply it to criminal. There's actually more things in the criminal because it's their burden. So thank you for what you do, Grimner, and I hope you get better. Continue to heal up and get back with us as soon as you can. I'll be with you next week, Tech Diffs and Nature Willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.